about. And today you are going to have two presentations that are very important. That maybe they are going to take a little bit longer, but we'll try by all means to consolidate everything within the time allocated. We're dealing with two topics today, ECG and also the introduction of African languages in schools. We are going to be starting with ECG, early childhood development, recognizing how important that is. We are looking at universalizing ECG, making sure that every child is exposed to ECG, and that is the part that is very complicated because, yes, it falls under basic education, but again, understand the vastness of ECD where we incorporate even various departments like Department of Social Development, a number of NGOs that are dealing with issues of ECD, even within basic education itself. The challenges that we are still facing is basic education, and also looking at the importance of early childhood development, where we all know that. And we believe that that is where we have to lay the solid foundation for our children, for them to be able to perform even in the later stages. And that is why we felt it is very important that we deal with this topic, how we're going to make sure that that foundation is being built, that solid foundation. Hence, we see so many reports talking of maybe poor quality, our learners not getting well into the education system, and that is where we all believe that once that solid foundation is built, we won't be facing so much challenges as we go further with our student system. So today when we talk to that topic, we are having the Department of Social Development with us, everyone saying these two departments are both responsible for ECD. We are going to hear what is it that they are doing on their part together with Department of Basic Education, and where do they come together, and how are the two departments planning to go even further to make sure that ECD is in the right track in our country. So we have got 1 hour for that presentation. What we are going to do, we are going to allow each department, social development, to start with their presentation, just to give us everything to say what is it that they're doing when it comes to early childhood development, where are they taking these children up to the age of five. At the age of five, then we get the Department of Basic Education getting in. So Department of Social Development, we are going to start with your presentation, thereafter getting to the Department of Education, and then once we finalize that, we also have the Department of Government's Monitoring and Evaluation. I know there is something that they want even to say there. We just take those three inputs together, then we move towards the engagement with presentation that you have got. So all in all, we have got an hour. If the presentations can take up to 30, 35 minutes, meaning that maybe social development just takes 15 minutes, the performance and evaluation, your 10, basic education, your 15, then we interact. I think that will be proper. We will be able to handle it. Over to you, Department of Social. Oh, I'm sorry. I'm taking for granted. I'm seeing people like, almost in minutes as if we know each other already as we are here. But I know these introductions will take long. Can we be quick just to introduce ourselves? I'm sorry, I even took it for granted that you even know me. It's not only the Department of Education that is with us today. We'll just do the intro very quick, really. Let us not do the paragraphs when we introduce ourselves. As you know, exactly whom we are dealing with. We are having the Portfolio Committee on Basic Education in Parliament. I'm Nomalu Ngelobina, who is the chairperson of the committee. Can I just, members, can you just quickly introduce yourself so that we go to the Department of Social Development to do the same?
Khosa Samalani, member of the committee.
Good morning, my name is Ed Lovemore, also a member of the committee. Good morning, Chair, apologies for being late. I'm Desiree Kanagal, member of the Education Committee. Good morning, thank you, Chair. Sonia Bostock, also a member of this portfolio.
My name is Derek Mouroni, member of the committee.
My name is Michael, a member of the committee.
Morning, my name is Kwede, a member of the committee.
Involvement in EDG, evaluation and research, Steve Winnick. My colleague Ness, a member of the committee.
Can you just introduce ourselves just around the table? You just have to highlight from which department are you.
Randall
Van den Jeffers from the ministry.
Ms. Panda Wanguli, Department of Social Development.
Mosan Mabambeka, Department of Social Development.
Matapel Ntswane, Department of Social Development.
Mari Louise Sanor, Department of Basic Education.
Jenny Joshua, Department of Basic Education.
Noeli, Department of Basic Education.
Kwani Mumalo, Social Development.
I'm Dennis Bandi, Content Advisor, Portfolio Committee on Basic Education.
Good morning, Edwin Brown, Committee Secretary for the Portfolio Committee.
Thank you very much. Can I then over to you, Ms. Mumalo, to lead us?
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson and Honourable Members. I'll be presenting on progress that we have made on the integrated program of action for early childhood development, 2013 to 2016. The COA was approved by Cabinet, and it speaks to various government departments that are playing a role in the provision of early childhood services. The outline is basically the purpose, background, the progress itself, and then the conclusion. As I indicated, I will be providing the progress. Just a bit of a background. Members will remember that there were three key processes. We always want to quote them to remind audience that what we present in COA, it is informed by the three key processes, your diagnostic review, the ECG conference session plan, and the review of the NIP, the National Integrated Plan for Early Childhood Development. Then we came up with the POA because we said we can't have three different plans, let's consolidate and have one plan. Now this POA has got three proposed timeframes, short term, which is April 2013 to March 2014, medium term, April 2014 to March 2015, long term, April 2015 to March 2017. This POA also, Honourable Chair, has got 8 elements. It deals with issues of legislation and policy, institutional arrangements, human resource areas, comprehensive ECD program, issues of infrastructure, funding and partnerships, research, monitoring and evaluation, and then communication is the last one. Now, my presentation is going to try to summarize the progress that we have made since the approval of the program. So I will take the elements and try to summarize the program of action itself and the presentation and the progress so that if I don't touch on any areas, members can always ask questions for us to clarify. In terms of the first element of legislation and policy, by March we are expected to have drafted the policy. So in terms of where we are, we do have a draft policy in place which we are currently consulting with the sector. However, there's a parallel process that we want also Cabinet to allow us to do gathering so that we can get the nation talking about this. Because as you consult with provinces, you sometimes miss out people who might want to enrich the work we're doing. So that's where we are. We do have we're going to finalize consultations in August. But as I said, beyond this consultation, we're going to do gathering. In terms of norms and standards, this deliverable is due, we have to report by next year, but we started some work already. All participating departments were expected to review their norms and standards on a quarterly basis. We do have a forum where we meet, and we expect departments to tell us in terms of the norms and deliverable of EBD, how are they reviewing them to really be in line with the policy, because now we are saying the policy will be the Bible. But as we speak, there are EBDs that are functioning. How do we deal with them? Then we also said we need to harmonize some norms because some are contradictory to each other. As you pick that up as you do registration of ECDs, that there are norms. For instance, if you talk about what bylaws are expecting to ECDs for ECD owners to comply with, that's what social development expects in terms of norms and legislation. So saying the new policy will be the one that says this is the direction we go in terms of the norms that we want to see for the sector moving forward. Now, we also going to amend the Children Act, because as we come up with a new policy, there are elements or areas that we think for us to deliver ECD services better, we need to relook at the current legislation, be it within social development domain, be it basic education, health, and municipalities. So all we have done by now, we say the policy will be the one that guides all the review. However, there are technical amendments that we also identified that are really hindering us to provide ECD services. Now, for instance, for Children's Act, we do have certain amendments. That's where we have included technical amendments that do not need policy to be finalized. And that second amendment is going to go through parliamentary process this year. Now, also on the area of policy, we are talking about an integrated strategy for the implementation of universal access for children back to school going age. We debated a lot about the definition and the ages, but we ended up saying, if we're saying we're coming up with a strategy to universalize, let's talk all the ages until school going, it doesn't matter who's doing what at what age, but the strategy should speak across the board. If social development you take up to 4 years, let it be so. Basic education, you also say we're taking a certain age until school going, but the strategy we have, because you can't segregate in between, you have to have one policy as a country or one strategy. So we also have a concept paper in place that will assist us to move towards public good or universal access. Even the policy itself, it articulates well the issue of public, making ECD a public good and also universal access. So instead, we need to come up with a rollout plan, because for you to ensure that the universal access, you make it a public good, you probably need a plan that will be in phases to make sure that you realize the objective. Now, in the area of institutional arrangements, coordination and integration, this is key, because it's one thing that was also came out of the diagnostic process. Also, it's an issue that we really need to strengthen, because without proper coordination or strong coordination, we will not deliver ECD. Now, the policy that I'm talking about, it is proposing certain mechanisms. One, it is proposing an ECD agency. Secondly, beyond the agency, we're also proposing other mechanisms like strengthening the departments that are currently leading in terms of ensuring that there's enough capacity and the right capacity. But also we say, even with those proposals, we need a feasibility study to look at each one so that we can advise cabinet properly. Because currently, it was benchmarking exercise that was done to say what is happening in other countries, what we think can work better. But I think we need to zoom into this. If we say we're proposing an agency, what does it mean for our country? And what are the cost implications? Is it feasible? Is it doable? What will be the role? And also, if we strengthen, for instance, social development, DDE, and health, at what level do you want to pitch that? Or do we just want to come such as, okay, if it's a branch in another area, or an ECD chief director, but we need to be informed by evidence to say at what level do we pitch that. So that's where we are in terms of coordination mechanism. But as we speak, social development is still coordinating all other departments in terms of making sure that we implement the program of action. In terms of human resource capacity, we have acknowledged that we need to strengthen internal capacity as it is to ensure that we deliver. And beyond internal capacity, we must also make sure that we deal with capacity within the sector itself, the ECD practitioners and so on, to be able to deliver quality services for our children. We are aware that 2015 is around the corner. However, you will see in the progress that all departments that are playing a role in ECD delivery were asked to come up with plans on how are they going to increase capacity. But what is important, you only do that when you have done proper capacity audit to say in our environment, what do you need, what is there, so that you are able to bridge the gap. Also, I've highlighted the issue of community colleges, which DHET has reported on. We believe that this approach will assist in ensuring that the training and capacity building of the sector is really lifted, because currently I think they've gazetted the policy on the proposal of community colleges within DHET. Remember, the issue here of training. We said DBE will have to work with DHET in terms of training of ECD practitioners so that if you take over as government or you make it a public good or universalize, you need to have a strong capacity out there to be able to deal with the numbers of children and provide quality ECD services. The ECD program, comprehensive program, this is the process that we coupled with the policy. So every construct this policy, we also have a comprehensive package that was developed, which includes the first 1,000 days. So we currently constructing two documents, the policy itself and also the comprehensive package. So the first that I've mentioned for policy also applies here today. We're going to also ask for us the permission to gather so that we get a nation talking and making inputs in terms of this is the right direction in terms of the type of services or package of services that we want to provide for our children. Issues of infrastructure. We plan to do an audit. We have just completed an audit of all ECDs in the country. But however, I must indicate that we are facing a moving target. As you plan your audit, you say, I'm going to audit 19,000 because you know there's 19. As you continue with the audit, others are being established. So we might have missed others, but there's a plan as to how do we deal with those that are not audited, because it's very important for us to know where we are as a country. That's the only way we can begin to improve. So currently, as I speak, we have more than 21,000 ECD facilities in the country. We also have a separate report on the audit. We will be happy to share with the committee as and when they have time and invite us to come and present. It's not part of this presentation because it's a very long report, so I could not integrate it in this slide. But I must say what we have learned from the audit is that there's a lot that we need to do, and the challenge was that a lot of these ECD facilities are owned by either individuals, they are not community-based, that we need to deal with, and most of them are in a bad state in terms of infrastructure because they just rent a building, but you find that they've got basics in terms of where municipalities approve that they can run an ECD facility, but we want to see better infrastructure for our children. So COCTA is one of the departments that are key. We are part of the interdepartmental committee where we're working with infrastructure. So even within the policy itself, we have a section that deals with infrastructure to say, moving forward, how do we want to see infrastructure for ECD in the country? And also Treasury is part of that committee. Funding and partnerships. Here we came up with a funding policy with differentiated modalities for ECD, for both center-based and non-center-based. Because we said to ourselves, if you want to ensure universal access, you cannot only do it through center-based. You need to make sure that you also explore your non-center-based and community-based to see how do you take programs, ECD programs, to communities where you can reach more children rather than expecting them to go to a center-based only. So we came up with that policy and social development because we currently funding ECD programs. And there was a proposal that we need to look at donor funding. All it's saying there is that we do have a forum that we're working with donors so that we can begin to say how can we strengthen funding for ECD services in communities. We have not yielded positive results in terms of identifying key donors who will fund. However, we're still engaging at that space. In terms of research, monitoring, and evaluation, in policy itself also we have proposed MNE framework. I think we're working with DPME. They have a very good seat in our meeting to ensure that we have an integrated monitoring and evaluation framework for ECD as part of this policy so that as we implement how we define how monitoring is going to be. Now, in terms of communication, this is the area that is not really going on strong. We just need to ensure that we attend to this one because although the timelines are still further up, but we should be starting talking about now ECD, what is happening, what we have done, what else we do have an audit. We should be not telling the public what are the findings. So communications department working, we have to work with other communicators from the departments that are in the ECB to come up with an integrated communication strategy that will talk about work that is done in different departments, even collectively, and ensure that the public is informed. So this item we have not given much attention, but it's very, very critical. Issues of ICT strategies also is one area that we said we need to begin to look at strategies that will integrate ICT in ECD environment. I think I've spoken to issues of commandments. I'll run through this one quickly, Chair. I won't waste time. What we wanted to share with the committee is that we have introduced an ECD registration process. So the purpose is that we realize that there are a lot of ECDs that are struggling to be registered with the department, either for funding or just for them to comply with norms and standards that the Federal First Nations Act. We have introduced three levels. We have a gold, we call it a gold, where you get a full registration, and where you meet 80-100% of the norms, then we give you a gold, say you fully comply. Then we also have silver, which is a conditional registration for a period of 3 years. We're saying, okay, you're complying with 50-79%. We give you 3 years to move to 80-90-100% in terms of compliance. So we have specific requirements for each level. For instance, we don't compromise issues of nutrition, issues of staffing ratio, and the level of education of practitioners, safety and protection of children. The last one is bronze, because we said to ourselves, whether we like it or not, there are those ECDs that are operating in the garages or in the backyard or in the mukuku. What do we say? Because our children are at it. So we say, let's look at those. We say, okay, at what percentage of compliance are you? If you're 42-49, we now say, we give you a funding that will take you from where you are to be able to provide safety, nutrition, ensure that children are protected, there's some stimulation taking place there in terms of programs, and you are using also a recognized guideline. Those are basic. So even if you're in the garage, we say, are the children safe? If anything happens here, our priority will be children. So we give you full subsidization, because currently we don't give you if you don't comply. But we're saying we are not developmental. If we leave you, how on earth are you going to move to a particular place? Because you rely only on the fee that the children are paying. Now, we're also proposing the no-fee ECD center, where we're saying parents do not pay if you're not according. So we're going to have a means test, but also we're saying the CSG currently is going to use it as a means test. If the children are receiving CSG, we cannot expect them to take 300 grand and pay 150. They are left with 150 for other things. So that's what we are proposing. And we now come up with a 5-year program to assist you in an OD, organizational development, plan to ensure that you move to a level where we want you to move to. So these are some of the new things that we... But we also say, if you don't, you are below 39. You say it's non-compliance. After we've done everything, then we close you down because we're thinking it's risky for the children. We don't provide you with any support because we have tried to assist you and still you are not moving to a level. But we're also saying we are going to put appeal processes in case you are not happy with the decision that the department will take in terms of closing you down. These are some of the blockages that we have anticipated we're working with. Implications for owner realities that are being owned by individuals. I think those are the things that we need to tell them, and even the funder. So I'm the founder, then I'm the decision maker and all that. So even municipal bylaws, they impact negatively and positively on the registration process. Issues of zoning and rezoning is one of the areas that really ECDs are really struggling with. And issuing of health certificates, which is outside the mandate of social development. We rely on other key stakeholders, and it makes it either delays or make it difficult for ECDs to register. But we are engaging to ensure that we deal with those blockages. This slide speaks to the capacity building that we wrote, a new proposal, which now capacitating provinces to ensure that they now understand what we have proposed and assist UCDs accordingly. I don't think I'll go to the role again, Honorable Chair. It's basically some repeats what I've already said verbally in terms of moving forward regarding the processes that I've already mentioned. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Ms. Mabo.
Thank you very much. I'm sorry, Ms. Thanks a lot for the presentation. Members, can you just note our questions, please? I can see there is a lot of writing and a lot of interest, and there are a lot of things, Ms. Mabo, that you still need to bring out from you. But then let's go to the Department of State Basic Education, then we'll go to Peronism and Evaluation at the end. Basic Education, you have 10 minutes, please, of your presentation. Or 15 minutes, then we're here. You have 15 minutes.
Yeah. Yeah, Honorable Members, thank you very much. It's always an honor and a pleasure to be presenting to the committee. Let me also at the same time convey the apology of the DGUs in Mpumalanga, meeting with all provinces to prepare for the workshop of the two portfolio committees anticipated to happen probably between the 29th and the 30th. So the DG is there with all nine PEDs. Chair, we're not going to cover what has been covered by the PDG from Social Development. I can see that the honorable members have received a number of documents which they have processed. We will try and keep within the 10, if not 15 will be the most. I'm just going to probably cover what has not been covered by the colleague. This is the presentation outline, and indeed our interest will be focusing mainly on the area of access and probably the issues related to responsibilities, and then we'll probably wrap it up because the bulk of the issues have been covered. Well, because we come from a teaching profession, we always say you move from the known to the unknown, from the simple to the complex. Chair, through you and honorable members such as Honorable Lovemore, we've heard you saying in Parliament we've made progress in access, and indeed the numbers agree with you, that progress has been made. You can see from death to four, there's been a geometric increase. You can see from 2002 to 2013, there is that increase in terms of access enrollment of learners. Regarding grade R, the situation is more or less the same. We are in 2014, we should be over 800 now. It's quite a healthy picture, still in grade R. And of course, when we talk about five-year-olds, we're giving you the numbers there, which are quite healthy as well. An improvement which is quite good. Five, six, and seven-year-olds, you can see there's a very good picture of growth throughout. But the issue then, Chair, is the quality, which you refer to, and which honorable members constantly raise in the debates, and we fully agree with that view that says now that we have learners attending institutions, what do we do in improving quality? And we have identified four areas which are very crucial, based even on the research and the survey which was conducted by Social Development and other work which has been done in government. And we are saying it's important that learners who come to grade R are school ready, and at the moment they are not. And this gaps in being school ready cognitively to absorb or to learn the skills and the knowledge accumulate up to even late in their schooling period. Up to even, you'll see, when we share the report with you in Pretoria in a few days' time, up to even grade 12 and grade 11 and 10, if you don't get the foundation right, in other words, getting learners to be school ready right from grade high. And we have identified the issue of a common curriculum from birth to fourth throughout the system, which is crucial. A curriculum is a quality determinant in education. It's very crucial. Number two, the level of qualification of practitioners. Practitioners are equally, a quality determinant, directly impact on the quality of education. And in there, we of course looking at the qualifications, but we go even beyond that. We even talking about conditions of service of practitioners to bring about stability in the system, because those are very important. But also is the issue of the collaboration between relevant government departments. Of course, starting with ourselves, the Department of Social Development and Health. The working together is somewhat okay at national level, but when you cascade to provincial level, you don't get the requisite amount of collaboration that is required really to make sure that we pull strings together. And it shows in provinces where you're getting that collaboration working, you'll find that even the quality of ECD provisioning is much better than in those provinces where you don't get the same. And then I've spoken to improving conditions of service. We part of what has been discussed even with provincial heads is the absorption of those ECD practitioners who have now attained suitable qualifications. We should be getting the same benefits as all CS educators in the system. And that's what we are discussing. We want PEDs to absorb those practitioners so that we don't lose them to other sectors. And I will then hand over to Mr. Samuel to just touch quickly the areas of responsibilities, and then we'll wrap it up.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair. Social Development has provided us with the overview of the different department responsibilities and progress related to that. We just wanted to present the DBE responsibilities, and this is done in collaboration with the Department of Higher Education and Training, and really just to indicate that it is about ensuring that there's clear career path, that the upgrading of qualifications happens, and that we establish a professional registration system for ECD practitioners. As has already been indicated, the issue about communication and advocacy, we wanting to highlight two areas. The one is, honourable members might know, Takalani Sesame, which is a television and radio program, and we work closely with them to ensure that the programs support the curriculum, both the curriculum for both support as well as the foundation phase. We also are working with the Karikudi volunteers because they are working with adults who generally are taking care of young children, and we believe that if we engage with them and show them how to stimulate young children, that would, in a very informal way, children will be able to be stimulated. The document that Social Development was referring to is one that is currently under scrutiny in the different provinces, and we've indicated what is being suggested within the policy and programs. And then maybe just to touch on the additional 2 years in the medium-term strategic framework, the planning for the introduction of the pre-grade R is being proposed, and we are saying it will be led by Department of Social Development, and the year given in terms of target is by 2019, we'd have a plan, and that by 2019 all learners would have had access at least to the Grade R program. And so there's a workshop happening at the moment here in the Western Cape and in Gauteng next week, and that would finalise the provincial consultation on the draft policy and programs, and then thereafter we will take the process through to Canada. Thanks very much.
Thank you very much to be in. That was a great 10 minutes. For the first time, Mr. Moylen.
Can we then go to performance and evaluation? We need to, your 10 minutes.
Okay, I'll just take five. I don't have a presentation because these are the two departments that are primary delivery, but I think there's some useful context I can just give. Firstly, I think just to say that in the evaluation of ECD, one of the key things that came out was that we needed to look at ECD from conception, not from age two, so the first 1,000 days, but just bearing in mind what Connie's presented in relation to the importance of bringing that whole dimension. That also brings in another dimension, which is the key role of health. And I come back to that, and health's not actually here now. And I think one of the important issues is that health is central to early childhood development. I'll come back to that. I think the second thing is the comprehensive services, which Connie talked about. I think the other thing that we needed to make sure that the poorest children were accessing, and how make that happen. I think there's so many things there, sometimes one can lose sight of some of the core messages. In relation to grade R, there was an evaluation completed on that. Both the grade R evaluation and the ECD evaluation are public, and you have linked in the reports. The grade R is where the quality issue that Mr. Moyle highlighted is limiting the impact of grade R, and that's why this is such an important issue for us to deal with. We have to deal with the quality issue before we try and get greater quantity. We have to get the quality sorted. And particularly, even in the richer schools, grade R is not having an effect to that. So we need to try and improve the quality throughout the system, but in the poor schools, it's really a problem. And so we've really got to do something about this, otherwise we're shooting ourselves in the foot. So I think that's critical, and it's very encouraging to see what grade R's, what DB is planning now to try and address this, and I think we need to watch that space. The third area is around nutrition, and as I mentioned, from the ECD, we realize the importance of nutrition. There has been an evaluation of nutrition which is just completed. It's in a sense, I think, been slightly the problem child in the sense that Department of Health focuses more on the clinical interventions than it does around nutrition. But just to highlight, 21% of children under 5 in South Africa are stunted. That means whatever we do later with schooling or everything, those 21%, their potential has been hampered. They will never achieve what they could have achieved if they had not been stunted. And not only them, but their children. So a quarter of our children are permanently damaged and their children are damaged. So this shows, I think, the importance of dealing with nutrition and from conception through to the fact that it was a 1,000 days. That evaluation, the report is approved. It will go to Cabinet very shortly, and you should be able to get access to that very shortly. And I think it's also pointing to the importance of community-based interventions to deal with nutrition. Things like behavior change are much more difficult to deal with than the sort of clinical interventions in clinics. And so the importance of, for example, the equivalent of the ECD practitioners, so community nutrition advisors and people like this, to actually access children throughout the community to do proper growth monitoring, etc. So that sort of interventions, and hopefully you'll have access to further information. It's very important, I think, that it gets integrated fully into the ECD plan going forward. The other thing just to report, I think, is that in the medium-term strategic framework, grade R is a sub-outcome within outcome 1, so it's got a high profile within outcome 1, and within outcome 13, which is social protection, there's a sub-outcome around early childhood development, which is led by DSD, but also incorporates the nutrition. And there is, for example, a nutrition target now to reduce stunting from 21% to 10% over the next 5 years. So that's a very significant target which we need to monitor, because it's really a critical one, I think, for the future of our children. So I think this has been a very productive area of work around early childhood development, which is sort of coming together, and I hope we can make a big impact on our children in the future.
Thank you very much for those presentations. Before we even open up, who can answer this one? When we talk of ECD, what are we looking at exactly? Is it the three departments that we are having here? Can you define what is it that we are looking at when we are saying early childhood development? Who can try to give us that, you know, that definition as we move forward? I know as we are seated here, we've got so much when we think of ECD and study. We are not moving from the same channel as when we talk of ECD. the same way. What is ECD? What are we looking at when you say, what's your thing, ECD? I'm coming to you, Mr. Mahala. I'm coming to you. Yeah.
Well, I understand you to be best 8 years old and that's my
income. Okay. Best 8 years old?
I, Chairperson, I agree that internationally and in all of our documents we refer to the definition, the universally accepted definition as those to 8 years of age. Within the legislation, the Children's Act speaks to birth to school going age because they don't have a legislative jurisdiction over us. But the, you know, the interlinking between the different pieces of legislation is important. Within the context of documents, whenever we talk about ECD, it depends on what the issue is. And in this particular context, it's up to school-going age. So even those whom that are not in grade R would be catered for, you know, through the Children Act. Yeah.
Connie? Thanks, Honourable Chair. I think Mario has covered.
I'll take it.
We informed by the Children's Act, saying it's best to school going. However, as I presented, I indicated that even before that, we need to begin to say how do we support the parents when they, you know, from conception until, because anything can go wrong. Once you wait until that, you might not be able to deal with certain issues that impact on children as they develop in the mother's womb. Thank you.
I think one of the important things that came out of the diagnostic review is you must take it from conception, because already the damage is done by the time the child is born if they didn't say undernourished during pregnancy.
Thank you very much. Honourable Nagmo, you had a follow up on this question.
Yes. Okay, I just want to clarify, what is school going age? Does school include grade R? And potentially the pre-grade R. What is school going age?
Within our context, there's a requirement in terms of the compulsory age, which is 7 years of age, or grade one. Those are the two compulsory determinants. And so anybody that is not in the compulsory phase can be governed by social development. But because we are, increasing and improving the grade R component, that is considered school-going as well. And until the compulsory status of grade R is dealt with, it allows for us to work together.
Thanks, Chair. I think we also looked at the developmental areas of children, because sometimes children with disabilities, they are not in terms of chronological age. So we also are trying to accommodate them in terms of the definition.
Okay, thank you very much. No, honorable, I felt it was important for us to go through that, yeah, so that we move forward exactly, we know what is the I know, I have been observing this. Whenever we talk of ECD, there is always different understanding of today, what is it that we are looking at, but exactly today we know that what is it that we are focusing at. Can I then open up to you, honorable members, if ever you have got questions or just areas of discussions on the presentation that has been made. Honourable Lovemore, your hand is up. I know to you. Let me just note the hands. 1, 2, 3. Okay. Fine. Let me take you like that. Honourable Lovemore, you have a question.
Thank you, Chairperson. Most of my questions are going to touch on grade R, and so at the moment we're seeing that as part of ECD.
Let me just say, don't even specific. Whatever question honourable members we want to throw in, just throw in. The presenters will see where it fits, you know. I know some of the questions will be overlapping on other presentations that have been made, so, yeah.
Thank you, Chair. We had a presentation on this last year in June. I was just trying to find it now. In June, 19th of June 2013. Integrated Early Childhood Development Program of Action 2013 to 2018. I see your timelines have changed slightly. I am very confused, I must say. let me start with quality. This, the DPME, and it's one of the reports that we didn't get, by the way, the DPME is the first one about the impact of the introduction of grade R learning outcomes. I think we should get it, Chair. It's a very worrying report. You know, when it says the provision of grade R to all will improve results in the wealthiest quintile by about half a year's learning with almost no benefits for the lower quintile. So, and there's some really touched on it. That in fact, even grade R at the moment is not having, in the lower four quintiles, is not having an impact on grade one. It's not, because the quality is poor. So we don't have the capacity even to deal with grade R. I've been raising a number of questions, you might be aware, on this, and we don't even have an accredited qualification for grade R teachers in place. It only starts next year. 2015 is what I'm told by Minister Blades on Monday, that there will be an accredited qualification offered at only four institutions in South Africa, which is quite incredible. So my questions really go, and I know there'll be a lot of other questions, really go around the quality. It really worries me that what we seem to do in South Africa is quantity, and then we worry about the quality. Universal access to school, and then we say, okay, now 20 years into democracy, let's start worrying about quality, which is exactly what the Minister said in her speech, their budget speech. And grade R and ECD, now we seem to be doing the same thing. We've got a lot of ECD practitioners out there, but you are asking for NQF 4, so that's the trick level, if I'm correct. You are also talking about a qualification, which you say the current qualifications are under review, so somebody is certainly going to have to study towards a matric level qualification. You talk about the National Curriculum Framework. Do you have an actual curriculum for ECD in place? Okay, how are you going to control the quality? Are you going to have a curriculum which every ECD centre has to follow, depending on the level of the children, the age of the children? Are you going to require every ECD practitioner to do an accredited qualification or not practice? And let me check, if my first question, I know it's gone all over the place, and I apologize. The norms and standards. You talk about norms and standards, which appear to, it sounds as if they're going to all-encompassing. What do you anticipate that the norms and standards will, what aspects do you anticipate that they will cover? I'll leave it there for now. Thank you.
I just have a question with regard to the tabling by social development. They speak of municipal bylaws impacting on the registration process. What do you do in the event that it is a non-functional municipality where there are no bylaws? What is going to, how can I put it, which laws are you then going to adhere to if those bylaws are there but not being implemented? And then my second question is the audit, plus minus 21,000 facilities in the country, and some of them are individually run. These that are run individually by individuals, are they registered and how do they register? And then the issuing of health certificates, who issues it, how do they issue it, on what basis? That's what I would like to know. Thank you very much, Jay.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson, and morning, ladies and gentlemen, and members. One question has been covered, but I still have to ask you on the issue of the control of the ECDs, on the question of the requirements needed for the opening of these ECDs. It looks like it's free for all now. Everyone wants to open an ECD, just opens it. Even if the person doesn't even have an entry level of education. So how do we expect the person to produce effective and efficient quality learning? If the person himself or herself does not have any grade. The second issue is on the question of the flood. If it is found that the ECD does not meet a minimum requirement after 2-3 years, as specified on the slide, and what will happen to the children? And then who's going also to enforce that?
that it is happening. And the last question is on the issue of the norms and standards for space, because as we specified, the ECD is from conception, as you put it, up until 7-8 years, as you put it. The issue of playgrounds, you see, the equipment. Are we going to provide those equipment? Because my understanding is the child always plays. Always plays. So, and how do we monitor those things, and how do we maintain them? Because the question of maintenance also come into place on that. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you,
Chairperson. Mine will be based, I'm sure, social development and basic education. They will see where they fit it out. As I was doing my constituency work just last week, I went to Ward 17. I met an old lady there. She's looking after preschool children between the ages of 3 and 5, and they're about 20, 25. She has been doing this for the past 10 years. She has never got any assistance. She has got a lower primary teacher course, the old LPTC, yes. And the children have no nutrition. It's only what is provided by the parents. She has never even got any payment. And she's doing this religiously for the mothers who go to work just to help these young children so that they don't get exposed to abuse, slavery, or whatever. How does she get support? Or if the school departments can make maybe a checkup and see what can be done, because sometimes these people don't know. I also did not know what to say to her for her to get help. And she is doing this in a house which is being given by one of the local mothers. Otherwise, she told me they've got a site which was allocated by the Department of Agriculture. The people came and do cutting, and the preschool is registered, and I wonder if any help can be given. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Honorable Sandra.
Thank you, Chair. Yeah, I just want to, in a way, caution, and that is that we should not think that early childhood development centres or daycare centres. I think there's a crucial difference. And it seems when you speak to local communities that there is confusion. I think what we are trying to achieve, as I understood ECD, is to get children quality ready for school going, yes, to develop them so that they can do well at school. So we have to be very careful. I also say this, from there on the ground, that many of these people with very good intention to look after children, like was just also mentioned now, to be of assistance to mothers who've got to go and work or can't leave their children anywhere. And the gentleman spoke about damage in a certain category to 21% of our children. But you can also do a lot of damage if you put children in ECDs where people can't even read or even qualify to deal with it. Just like, you know, to study for a teacher, you go through psychology, subjects, and. I don't want to go into that. But we must also be careful. I ask this, and I say this, also because I believe that, in a way, we would want to see this as being compulsory, especially in our rural communities, at the end of the day. I don't know how we're going to achieve that if we don't have quality practitioners. I think it's of great importance that we do not damage children further just by putting them in some sort of a facility. What is going to happen to the current preschool facility or creches where we do have very good qualified teachers running those? In many instances, are the negotiations on the table? What is the feeling about that? And then I would just like to also say that I don't personally believe, I think great strides have been made for the school nutrition and school transport. but I think we must not try to be everything all at once, because we're not going to get it right. I'm sorry, because there are a lot of challenges to all of us in the current system of that. Now to fix it, you know, to sketch this picture that's going to be perfect and solve our problems. We know what we want at the end of the day from ECD. How are we going to get there step by step? Because even today, yesterday I was in my constituency early morning, and children between 7 and 15 is not in school in poor communities. They are not. How are we going to get these children who need it the most? Because that is the foundation. I raise this with great empathy and sympathy to the people and the parents out there where people can't even read and write to a person, and now they have to understand the necessity to send their children to ECD to prepare them for life.
Thank you very much, Honourable Members. You know, I think really the topic that we're dealing with is quite a sensitive one, but at the same time, Honourable Members, I always believe, and everyone in the house, I always believe, in whatever way we say, we must be very thankful of these centers, the ECD centers that are there. In as much as they might not be meeting all the requirements that are needed, but in the communities out there where people are, I can assure you they have played a very important role. Yes, it is a challenge on our side, the government, the departments that are concerned, to say how best do we fine-tune them, how best do we redirect them. But you can't believe the role that those gogos, those mamas have played in those communities without being educated the way they are, you know. Yes, it is a good warning that we must never confuse those daycare centers as to the ECD centers that we are talking to. But for me, I still believe for us to move towards the ideal situation, what we all wish to see in the country, definitely there will be no point where we say we can throw away what has been done all along. And I think the department in front of us today, that is what we are here to do, is to say how best do we move forward, how best to make sure that those centers get improved the way you want them to be improved. That will also lead me to the question that I was going to pose to the Department of Social Development on the three levels that you have just mentioned, the gold, silver, and the bronze. It's quite important because it means there are centers that are being registered, but knowing very well that they are far from reaching the minimum norms and standards that are needed. Yes, you are giving them 5 years, but can you give us a picture? What is it you fund them? What is it that you do, maybe, within these 5 years? You know the situation. Yeah. Oh. is that so much hot? It is, really. Is it so hot that can bend the paper? How? I never thought of this. Yeah, can't you switch it off?
Press again.
Or it's ready to them to explode.
Not this way. By fire.
Or just let it be there. Okay. Yeah, I social development, if you can just, how are you assisting? How do you assist these centers really to reach that stage? One member has even mentioned the way, you know, surely there are minimum standards where you want to learn from these centers. But here is a mama with a garage squashing 50. Those are the things that are happening, you know. How much do you assist them to say, after 5 years, at least they should have improved, you know, just give us that. The Department of Basic Education, it will also go to social development. I was very happy when you mentioned the issue of no fee centers, because
as an honorable member is saying, we find them, find our mostly children are roaming around the street because parents cannot afford to take them even to those informal, to those places. I think that one really, it would be a huge breakthrough for the government if you begin to do that. But at the same time, Department of Basic Education, we're talking of quality here, we're talking of qualifications that are proper. Which are the institutions that really that offer this? I know we're talking of community colleges that are still going to be open, but what is it that you are doing? Are we not looking, taking this as one of the critical skills where we can say even a Funda Lushaga can cover some of the practitioners so that we check the issues of qualifications when it comes to the issues of the practitioners, and that will also lead to the service of conditions of service as we are talking about. Again, I was happy when social development, I think Josh, I'm not sure whether social development or basic education talked of the issue of curry good. I think it's you. I think that one, again, it's one of the features that you must say, you must make sure that you stick to that, because as you are saying, the level of those people who are taking care of, they fall under curry good, most of them, whatever they can be proven from curry good, let's make sure that they improve the level of the practitioners that we are looking at. It's one of the things that can be very important and we can see ourselves moving forward. Otherwise, can I give, or would that receive social development, the chance to respond, then we are kind.
Thanks, Honorable Chair. I'll start with the one for bylaws. What we're saying is that if there are no bylaws in a particular municipality, we register a program of ECD, not a starter, because the reason why one municipality come on board is to certify the starter itself is safe to accommodate children and also the numbers that you want to register for. So what we advise centers to say, if you cannot be registered as a center base, and we can, in terms of insurance, like register you as a non-center base, as a program that will run outside a confined structure, but you still provide the same services that a center base could provide. And even the mobile, because here the non-center base is the variety, there's a mobile, you can have gazebo, play groups, you know, there are variations of those where we can register so that children in that municipality, they should not be disadvantaged just because they are still not functioning by laws and other things, that you need an ECD program to be run in that particular municipality. Where there's a structure and the municipality is non-functioning, we're not going to register because we want a certificate. The act is there in terms of that requirement. If there's a structure and there's no bylaw that guides that municipality to register, then we'll have a challenge. We'll have to see how we then assist. But we're not going to register without a municipal confirmation of a... Then in terms of health certificate, the health certificate also concerns safety of the structure. It is issued by the municipality. So when we do registration, we go as a team, or they can even go after we have left if they are not available on that day to assess the safety of the structure, and then they issue a health certificate in terms of occupation, whether it's safe for children to stay. Now, in terms of what are we funding? Whether we can find plain material or whatever. Yes, in the new registration process, we also say we are proposing that at least we give you one-off amount to buy certain basics. However, in a monthly subsidy, we also propose to the facility to say, disaggregate your amount into making sure that there's a portion for nutrition, there's a portion for learner support material, there's a portion to remunerate practitioners or staff and the gardeners and the cooks. That's how we package the subsidy currently. We even made it into percentage. 50% is for nutrition. 30% is for payment of patients, and then 20% is for learner support material. How do we support the ECDs that are not really up to scratch? All I said in the three categories that we're proposing is that if you are not compliant, they are going to assess you and then your developmental areas, each SCD facility won't be the same with the next one, the next instance of need. So that's why I talked about an OD plan, organizational development plan, linked to the years in which we have granted you either a temporary or conditional register. If it's 5 years, we will walk you through in terms of what are the things that you need to improve. With funding, we're not saying we'll just monitor you, because we acknowledge that you will not be able to do anything without the financial master. We give you one off based on your needs, and then we say, let's move together. Then, obviously, you will improve. If you don't improve, that's where we say, we will ensure that if we close you down, we take precautions in terms of making sure that children are not, because our interest, the reason we're funding you, the reason we're supporting you, it's about the children. So once we realize that as board management board or as staff or as owners, you're not really willing, then we will propose that we remove the kids, of course, in consultation with the parents, as we do with all chapter facilities, where there's abuse, where there's malfunctioning. We negotiate and talk to parents and committee, and then we remove to other programs. Then there was a specific case of an ECD that is operating at the garage. I think we will need to have details of that one, so that we ask our team to visit and see what are the issues there. And then we can provide a report after that, after it's visited and see. Because I understand it's registered but it's not supported. I need to clarify, honorable members, that it's not all registrations that give you funding. Some register not need funding. But once you register and you recognize that there's a need, then we recommend for funding. Honorable members will remind me if I've left something. Issues of nutrition, just wanted to make a comment. That we take it very seriously, it's very important for even the ECD. We, as a department, we also run a food security program. So currently what we're doing, we're coming up with Community Nutrition Development Center. ECD was identified as one of the key points where this food security will be targeted. So ECD will be also declared CMDC, so that they benefit from the food security issue outside the cool nutrition and other processes. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair. Let me try and respond to the issues raised. Indeed, the first comment that I want to make, in line with the comment that you made earlier on, is that the reality is that we come from a background where ECD provisioning was not in line with any particular standard that we should be expecting. And therefore, that's why it is a very important question that I have to say, if you have this qualification curriculum, as the colleague from the DDG from Social Development indicated, some of the centers were just dubbed as daycare centers. And we'd be lying to you if we say that some of them don't run a daycare center. Mm. And that's why we put together this integrated plan to make sure that we bring everything up to speed. And even the categories and the ranking that is done with social development is really to try and pull the system together and say, here is about laying a solid foundation for quality education. And as the colleague indicated, we would also come to the realization in line with the National Development Plan that the actual stimulation begins at conception. Although our legislations would say this and that, the actual quality life, if we're serious about quality life, must begin at conception. And I think it's therefore very important to take that background into account. And we fully acknowledge that as a useful point of departure. Right, Honorable Gina, you said, which are the institutions offering ECD qualifications? Maybe let me start by saying, DDE is responsible for two areas, for simulation programs and the training of the practitioners. Those are areas that we are responsible for. And I'm so happy this morning that issues of the running of the center, the setup of the centers, were directed to the right colleague, and she was able to respond to those. Many a time, you know, we had to deal with them. So in terms of the centers that are offering qualifications, you've got a certificate which is offered by about 21 providers, and that is registered. It's a registered qualification at NQF level 5. And the reason why Honorable Lovemore is even still keen to take people to NQF level 4, many of them are below NQF level 4. And we have data that shows how we have moved them from, you know, a qualification that is below NQF level 4, which is your equivalent of matric, to at least NQF level 4. And we are saying progressively from NQF level 4, you must go to 5 and eventually to 6. And the minimum requirement that we are beginning to signal is a diploma in early childhood development. A diploma. It is your NQF level 6. And it would be a bit unreasonable for us to begin to say either NQF level 6 or nothing. It would mean that many of our ECD centers will not have practitioners operating there. But also, we should be bringing to you a plan that says, in fact, we've got this data. This is the number of ECD practitioners that are below NQF level 4. This is the number of NQF level 4. This is the number of NQF level 5. This is the number NQF level 6. How long is it going to take us to take all of them to NQF level 6? Like we have done with unqualified, underqualified teachers, and at some point we said, now we've reached a point where we are issuing out the policy that says, if you're not, you don't have minimum of NQF level 6, you can't practice in education. And I think once we have done that, only then can we say, at this particular time, you should be saying, if you don't have NQF level 6, you can't operate in early childhood development. The CARICUDA program, yes indeed, we started it only this year. We believe that it can play a very important role in contributing to a stimulation program at a very early age, although Marie said, even in a very informal arrangement. Now, for us, the only norms and standards that we are dealing with is for grade R, which are norms and standards for infrastructure. In other words, the classrooms that these children get in must comply with the requirements. And I might also add, Shepherd, and we said, I think about 8 or 10 years ago, we are now moving grade R from what used to be your ECD centers to primary schools, the universal provision of grade R. Primary schools. And not all primary schools have got grade R. I think it's close to 80% by now. But there was a thing, I think it was in a conference which was held last year in East London, which involved social development and other departments and other players. But whilst we teach in this direction, we must also be mindful of the fact that quality grade R can also happen in some ECD centers. And we must take that into account so that we don't throw the baby with the bathwater. As I think the Honorable Van der Waal said, as to what do we do about preschools with suitably qualified teachers that are running quality programs? Are we also cutting them out and say, just take everything to schools? In fact, what we have started doing was that some of the centers must become satellites of primary schools. Must become extensions, because you wouldn't even have the requisite facilities that are required, and some of the centers do have. Instead of putting up new facilities, you could even use those facilities that are there as just the extension of your primary schools. The curriculum for grade R, CAPS is the curriculum. Grade R is part of the foundation phase. Now, for BEP to 4, we've come up with a national curricular framework. Provinces were implementing different programs. And we are saying we are now implementing a uniform curriculum, which is our national curricular framework, NCF, which we're looking at implementing in terms of our time frames. We're looking at implementing it in all the ECD centers. So that even though we say children learn through play, it must be structured. it must be quantified if we are pursuing quality. You must be able, out of pace, these are the things that they are able to do, and this is knowledge and skill that they are able to acquire, which was not there before. And we're putting this in place in pursuit of quality, as the colleague indicated earlier on. Time will tell whether these things become effective or not. International comparisons and literature and studies indicate that if you structure and a bit formalize, then at least you are able to measure the impact of what you do. I've addressed the issue of the qualifications. We don't have the capacity to deal with grade R. With respect, honorable member, not really, but I'm pleading that we acknowledge the background of where we come from. And we now have practical steps to address the deficiencies in the system. As we've always acknowledged, we've done well in Hackers, because the big problem 10 years ago was to get the children to institutions. We are now saying, let's sustain that, let's focus on improving quality and make sure that everything comes to standard in terms of dealing with quality and efficiency. I don't know whether I've covered this.
Thank you very much. Thank you, still there. On the issue of workbooks for grade R, we only focus on the age 5 on grade R at school as of now. Because, okay, thank you. Mr. Goldman, do you want to say something?
Just to say that the grade R report was sent to the committee, so I'm surprised it's not been, members don't have it.
I'll just have a to look at that and if it is there. If not, it's still going to come in. Yeah. Okay. I know we had follow-up questions and I'll just stick around. We've got only 10 minutes left for this. I know the follow-up question and Honorable Lovemore, Honorable Kayanta, Honorable, yes, then lastly, Honorable Koza, then Honorable Makota, in that order first.
Thank you, Chair. I'll try to keep just simple and straightforward. I believe it can to be unrealistically ambitious. To say that long term is 3 years. Long term is by 2017. I think that's absolutely unrealistically ambitious. One of the very ambitious targets that you have, and this is a DBE responsibility, is that 13,000 ECD practitioners will be trained towards an ECD National Qualifications Framework Level 4 in the financial year 2014-15. This financial year, 13,000 practitioners. Are you going to achieve that? Is it realistic? I want to refer to the Grade R report and to the action plan that was put together by the department in response to that. One of the things in that plan is to develop an appropriate school readiness assessment. It doesn't, this comes from the DPME website, it doesn't have a date. I don't see it in any of the presentations that we had. I might have missed it in the presentations we had today. Are we still working on developing a school readiness assessment? Let me leave that.
Challenges on how we can contribute to getting a big Shatakan, I think I should start by saying we have to take the presentations very positively.
So, in terms of supporting our system, and also taking into account the background of the majority that we are coming from a situation because which is not just like a town, if I can take the place where I'm coming from as a deep rural. So if there's a person who's trying to assist in terms of taking those learners and keeping them together, it is that there is no formal education that a person has, but in terms of safeguarding the children from moving around without a person, because the situation in a rural area cannot be the same as this one, because we can be able to have people who are so educated and can be able to take and pay for their kids. So my appeal is, let us criticize and put an input in terms of, we suggest that this is what we can be able to do so that we can be in a position to move in the correct direction. Thank you.
I wanted to check on the issue that has been raised that relates to the issue of the child at conception. Because in terms of the law, we understand there's a lot of tech or it's a very big issue to talk about a child who is still under conception, because that child does not have a legal right. So I wanted to check in us targeting the child at that level, aren't we setting ourselves up as a department for further constitutional challenges, because you might find that we might not be able to achieve what you are talking about here, particularly around the issue of the center on the child at conception. The other point that I wanted to raise would relate to the issue of the funding model. The funding model that is giving the extent to which ECD are so many in a ward, let's say for instance you can have more than 5 ECD centers. Maybe the department can respond to that, and how do we intend to make sure that we don't have high numbers, higher than what we already have in terms of the issues of, we understand that schools can be fast in an area, but in terms of ECD, there can be duplication, there can be like the other issues that can be contra-indicated to what we want to achieve. Maybe I should stop there, shall we?
Thank you very much. Honorable Goldschmidt.
Chair, thank you very much. Again, with regard to the bylaws, I hear Social Development spokesperson saying that you can register under the Children's Act as an APO. But what happened then with regard to the erection of sanitary stuff, sanitation, all those type of things? Because then we go back to the health issue. Because if somebody is allowed to erect a gazebo and have an ECD there, where are we going to assist these learners and children with regard to our toilets and the washing of hands and so forth? That's a bit of a problem. And then the safety of the structure. If the municipality is not operating correctly, who then issues the safety certificate? And into DBE, the time frame with regard to training, you have now said, sir, with qualification 4, 5, and 6, what are the time frames going to be? Are you going to allocate certain time frames to reaching NQF 6? Thank you.
Thank you.
Can I get the response? Trying to start.
Yes. Chair, once more, thank you very much. Let me start with the question from Honorable Poshoff. We're not allocated time frame yet, and I think we'll, even if it means we could leave it at 11, Marie, when we meet during the workshop to share the plan with you, so that time frame and the numbers are also captured in the plan, per province and nationally. So we'll make that information available to you.
You will need the breakdown of the breakdown of
of the especially what in those who have received training already will do that. School readiness assessment, I can confirm that the Honorable Lovemore do read these documents. It's a deliverable for 2014-2015 APT. So we'll come back to you and report to you. It's this financial year, fortunately, and the financial year is still running. The plan is ambitious. We don't think so. It's based on the historical data. 13 is not such a big number. Probably is that, yeah, 13,000 is not such a big. It's spread throughout the 9 provinces. We should actually be doing more than that, given the agency around this matter. So on regular intervals, we'll report to you on this one. I know you remember. When we come to quarterly report, so we'll tell you where we are.
And the same way, where are we right now? What are getting 30 from?
30,000 for 2014-2015, which is this financial year.
That's why I'm saying, taking feet from what number?
No, I wouldn't off the car. How many have we trained already? Do you remember?
I think, you know, there are two issues. The one is about the, you know, the indicators, not sticking to just one year and suggesting, you know, that...
Maybe just to indicate that, as honorable
members
know,
the training... For a cost purposes,
training is not starting and ending the training. The training is not conducted in, you know, start to finish in 1 year, and so generally runs over 2 years. Last year we were able to report on 19,000 honorable chairs in grade R and only. So now we're focusing on the below the grade R. But we were able to record 19,000 with a level 4 qualification last year. For grade R only. This year we're focusing on the P grade R, and we'll be able to report on what the status is of that in terms of it. But the training runs over 18 months generally, so it spans 2 years.
Well, as I said, Chair, the figures will provide all the figures. Who are the practitioners, how many are they, how many are at the level, and so on. And then indicate progress of those who have gone through different levels, 4, 5, and 6. I think the other one was providing the actual population figure as opposed to percentages. We used that essay, we'll get the actual figures for Honorable Van der Waals. And then the other one was which is a bigger one. It does not only relate to what we presented. Are we not setting ourselves up for focusing on child at conception? Well, if we don't do it, what will happen? If we don't do it, we tend to lose. If we do it, we'll still be criticized. No, what's the best? It's better to be criticized trying to do something right. And I know that we'll be putting up government to a very big risk of being, you know, litigated and so on. But the literature backs us up. And for me, the NDP, which defines the vision and our future, clearly encapsulates the issue that if we serious about quality life, interventions must happen fairly early than just death, as the colleague from DPME correctly indicated.
Thanks, Chair. I think on first comment on issue of first 1,000 days, I think as my colleague has said, we really need to invest at that level. We know it's not something that we can achieve overnight, but we also take into consideration current services. We say let's strengthen what is available and ensure that we support mothers more. Remember, the first 1,000 days goes over to 2 years. So as we start from conception up to 2 years, we think we make a great impact as government in terms of supporting the mothers and the baby. We also in the policy proposing what type of support that is needed for such a program. So if we you have time sometime, the committee can invite us to come present a comprehensive package that includes the first 1,000 days with Department of Health, because we're working very strongly with them, and also the policy proposals that we came forward. In terms of the funding model, and currently as we speak at Social Development, we funding 15 rand per child per day for 264 days. And I'm coming now to the question of mushrooming of ECD facilities, maybe in one word, funded as many. I think we need to be bold and say, we just, as we move towards making it public good and ensure universal availability and access, the statistics need to assist us to say in each ward how many children of that age cohort need access to these services. Then we begin to say, in terms of the outcome of the audit, we say in this ward there are so many facilities. If we need for non-center base, how many? We're busy with that process of rolling out, because as I presented, I said, we need to complete the rollout plan in a phased-in approach. It's something that we cannot do overnight, but that's the approach we're going to take as a sector collectively. We're working with all the government departments. Now, in terms of norms and standards for registration, I wouldn't comment much on the municipality, because I assume that any village or any place in the country is falling within a municipal ward, even if it's a tribal administrative, but they fall within a municipality. Whether that municipality is functioning or not functioning is another story. But what we're saying here is ECDs, we're saying, if somehow the municipality cannot issue documentation we're looking for, there's no way we can register a facility, because our primary objective is to ensure safety of children. Mm-hmm. And the only way you can confirm safety is by certifying the environment in which that program is taking place. Now, coming to the issue of safety, if it's a mobile or a play in a gazebo, how do we ensure that there's issues of sanitation, washing of hands? We have also set up norms and standards that are basic here, to say, even when you have a gazebo in a playground, what are the issues that you have to have for children? If you have a mobile, you have to have a mobile toilet for those children. And depending on the period, because we've also disaggregated in terms of time, there are those that take 2 to 3 hours, you know, for a particular number of days, there's a one-off program, you know, there's differentiation. So there are also variation in terms of what is required before we register you. So, yeah, I think.
Okay, thank you very much for this session that I think would come to Shushuan and to Sekong when you are looking at me. I know you wanted to bring something on conception and moving forward.
I just wanted to ask, I think it
will do. Can you do that?
Please? Yeah, just I think we have improved in terms of child mortality figures over the last 5 years, but we're still doing much worse in comparison countries like Brazil or Colombia, for example, that are similar middle-income countries. So we've got a long way to go, still about dropping the infant mortality rate, and it's linked with the nutrition story. So the issue of us dealing with the post-conception and the 30,000 days really is really very critical, because otherwise we're trying to do things and the horse is already bolted. We've already caused problems.
Yeah, I think as a committee,
I know Honorable Lamo is the one who's correcting me. I think we are confident, as to say, from the discussions that we had today, we are moving towards the correct direction of making sure that
we do lay that solid foundation for our children when it comes to the issues of our education. Yes, we understand the challenges that we still face with as a country. All of the departments here, they've mentioned the challenges, and we all know them, but we hope and believe that as we move forward, those are the challenges that will just that should be overcome, and we will make sure that this solid foundation for our quality education, which we are all looking forward to, is what we are going to be achieving as a country. So thank you very much for that. I know there will be follow-up sessions that are going to have with you, social development, monitoring and values. We are going to be together, and I know the agriculture has missed here, but you said, let us start from here, the Department of Health. So one day we are going to have all these departments under one roof to come in and deal with the issues of social development for us to pave the way for. So otherwise, thank you very much. We are going to go for a second presentation on introduction of African languages in our schools. Can I just give you 5 minutes to stretch as others are still collecting their stuff? We can even invite social development and monitoring to, if they want to choose to be part of the next person. Otherwise, I know we can thank you. Thank you so much for the information well shared. 5 minutes, then we are ready to start with the next presentation.
We are just a subject, we know, but Thank you. Honourable members, let us start. back to the second presentation. The incremental introduction of African languages in all our trainings. I know it's one of the things when it was introduced, we were all happy to hear that such a thing will happen. Looking at the issues of social cohesion, looking at the issues of broadening the knowledge of our children out there and the future of our children, that's one of the things that uploaded so much when it was introduced. We know that this year we were promised that the pilot stage was starting. That is what we want to hear. What is it? We understand during the beginning of the year there were so many criticisms that we are hearing even from the media on the introduction of these African languages in schools. We know, we have noted even the dissatisfaction that we even got even from the social partners of the department around the issues. We want to hear how far you are, how far are we as a country now, are there any challenges, if so, what is it that is there to counteract those challenges, and also from here, from this pilot and pilot, what is it that is being planned for the future to make sure that all these schools, in all the schools, the African languages are being catered for. So that has not even waste a lot of time. Can I just give over to the Department of Faith Education to lead us on the presentation then? And we only have, it's now 25 past 11, by 20 to 12, or is it too short? It's fine. 12:15, we might be done with the presentation so that we can, yeah. Thank you so much.
Sir, thank you very much. I'm sure the honorable members and the honorable chair will appreciate the fact that today I came with two colleagues and they are very strong managers and women in the department. I didn't want to say it in the presence of social development because I would have lost some points because the social just to say that there is a very strong team of women. But on a serious note, I'll be sharing this presentation with Dr. Joshua, who is the manager responsible for the program where the policy is being implemented. I must commend this committee. Not only do you rely on institutional memory in terms of the records, you've got some members who sent before. We are still members of this committee, so you leave nothing to chance. And that's why your opening remarks were so comprehensive in terms of what happened here. But essentially, we come to report to you on only one issue. We introduced the policy last year. And the reception that we received was amazing from all quarters in the country, by the way. Nobody said, there's no need for this policy, don't implement. Even criticisms were constructive criticisms. People were saying, are you ready? And that's why we come into present here to say, you that we must pilot as the portfolio committee, we are coming to give you the outcomes, the preliminary report on the pilot project. So essentially that's what we are bringing to the committee. A preliminary report of the pilot. You're almost getting it at the same time with ECOM. The Council of Education Ministers has not received this report. It will only be receiving it in October. So we are processing it through the internal structures. But we felt that it's important that we come and brief you and share this information with you. This is what you are going to cover. In fact, the first three areas are what we covered before. I won't spend much time on that. But just to highlight the importance of the policy. Why are we implementing this policy in this country? Of course, the purpose is to update the portfolio committee on the pilot project. The legislative mandate is very clear in terms of the constitution what the Constitution requires of us to promote all languages equitably. I think that is very clear. The Bill of Rights is even much more instructive in terms of course, promoting all official languages or languages of the choice of the public education institution. Our own policy that regulates this, the language and education policy, which was promulgated in 1996, I think it's very clear on promoting multilingualism as defining the character of our education and thereby of our country. So, very clear legislative mandate there. But I want to spend just 2 minutes on this one, because sometimes we forget about this very important point of departure. The learning outcomes in education are in the main influenced by the language of learning and teaching. The difficulties are not in necessarily cognitive abilities of our children. All our children have the ability to learn, and have the ability to learn at different levels, different aspects. Knowledge, skills, attitudes and values is coded in language. And the key problem in this country is around the language of learning and teaching. Worse still is that we come with a history where the majority of teachers who are teaching, even in the foundation phase, were not properly trained at all in the language of learning and teaching. And so I want to repeat this one, because I'm not convinced that all of us got it. Teachers who teach children in the foundation phase have been trained in English, in Afrikaans. And it is therefore not just a coincidence, it's not just a mistake that performance in Afrikaans and English is better than in African languages. The teachers that we have now, an honorable member, have not been trained to teach children in the foundation phase in the language of learning and teaching. They were trained in English, and they were expected to go back and then teach children in the language of learning and teaching, which happens to be mother tongue. Therefore, the performance of our learners should not come as a surprise. It's inherent in the training of our teachers. It's inherent in the capabilities of our teachers to teach in the language of learning and teaching, particularly in the foundation phase. Now, these learners go up the system with these gaps of skills and knowledge, and late in their school stage, around grade 10, grade 11, many of them start dropping out of the system because they can't cope. They've got huge gaps in terms of skills. And I'm also saying that these results that you see, it's a pity. I had hoped that we shouldn't be articulating this thing, but rather researchers, intellectuals, and academics should be the ones who speak when these results are released and say, look, your problem is here. And by the way, Chairperson, even as we speak now, there's only one university that is conducting a research with a view of changing the way they train foundation phase teachers, which is Fort Hare University. Otherwise, all universities continue with business as usual. And unless we break this cycle, we will come here, you will hammer us on the poor learning outcomes, but the situation will continue to get worse. Because teachers who are supposed to lay a strong foundation are trained in wrong languages. And I'm saying, teachers who have been trained to teach in the home language of English and Afrikaans perform better, because they are trained in those languages. But the majority of the teachers are trained in English, yet they are expected to teach in home languages that are African languages. And universities have not made an attempt to address that major gap in the system. And that's why I'm saying in point 3, very little is being done by institutions and broader civil society to address this perennial problem. It is indeed a perennial problem, Every time when we read the results, we think the results are there. What do you expect? If people who are supposed to teach are not fully equipped to do that, the result must be bad. The Germans train their teachers in German, not in French. And that's why their children are doing well. The French are training their teachers in French. That's why they are doing well. And I'm addressing, I'm woefully aware that I'm addressing a very complex, vexing issues, and I don't want to simplify it. But the fact of the matter is that we need to address that. You see, we can do two things with DHET, Department of Higher Education and Training. Address the issue of the foundation phase. Make sure that programs that are designed for initial teacher development and continuous teacher development are informed by the needs of the education system in this country. We know that universities train everybody in this country and people outside the country. But if in the teacher development programs there's no focus on literacy and numeracy, how do we expect our children to do better in literacy and numeracy? And I'm saying, you don't have those. And maybe it is said that you have a huge influence. And, I mean, you can bring all of us together. Seeing today you brought social development in RCA and DPME, and maybe one day you need to bring DHET and DEE together and say, how are you addressing this problem? Because until we address it, we'll continue to talk about poor learning outcomes. Right? This is just an example. This child is in grade 3. Maybe it was because of the desire of parents to take education in English as language of learning and teaching. The child is battling. The child can't make it. The child even failed to understand a very simple instruction to rewrite the sentence and just put in punctuation marks. This is what we are getting. We're analyzing the script. We're picking this. It's even worse when you get to grade 4 to grade 6. Some of the learners who are expected to respond in English, they respond in their own language because they don't have the vocabulary. They are not grounded in being able, they know the answers, but they are unable to use the language that is required. So, yeah. Yeah, this one repeated the question. Now, this is just to give you a picture of how African languages are performing. And unless we take a conscious decision as a country to make a huge investment in African languages, Jefferson, there's very little progress that we are going to make. I mean, PENSEL, at the moment, it's funded in the main from Lotto, and I think government has to make a serious investment in SLS. I mean, in getting universities to research to address the question that I just raised earlier on. And it will take some time. Universities also won't be able to address this overnight. You don't have the staff, you don't have the material, you don't have the capacity to do that. But we need to start addressing the issue.
I don't want to reiterate,
Chase.
I'm new to this country. What is PRL?
Oh, pre-bells. I'm sorry. It's pre-bell. Pre means before. Bells means progress in international reading and literacy studies. I'm very sorry. You know, education is a terrain of acronyms and an avalanche of acronyms. That's very true. Yeah, this is an international study that we participate. The good thing about us, even though some of the people advise the minister that, no, don't participate in this study anymore because you perform poorly. The minister insisted. She said, you'll never win the marathon by absconding from participating in some of the events that will prepare you to do better in the marathon. That's the view that he holds. We continue to participate. You can see that the African languages, I mean, look at Africans, look at English. Mm-hmm. If you do well, you have to actually perform above 500, which is the center point. Now, look at the African languages. They are actually hovering around this. There's a lot that we need to do as a country. Many institutions, including universities, this gives you a picture, the difference between those who write in their in their home language and those who write in a different language. And by the way, in small towns such as Makwasi and other small towns, the learner population in schools has changed, but the language of instruction has not changed because there's no capacity to change the language of instruction. Many learners who come from historically disadvantaged communities are taught in Afrikaans, believe it or not. And some of them end up doing exceptionally well in schools like Chemis and so on, and taking instruction in Afrikaans. Some don't just make it. The fact is, parents see these schools, the schools that are beacon of hope, they provide quality education, the semblance of order, etc. But language of instruction remains Afrikaans. This is just an indication. You can see, honorable members, that we managed to beat our neighbors only, Botswana. I'm sure Botswana, with respect, is almost the size of the Northwest province. So we cannot hide ourselves that much for being able to. In fact, the education system in Botswana performs much better than ours. Our teachers speak more than our teachers. I mean, we did a research comparing teachers in Botswana and teachers in South Africa. They teach more hours than we do. And then, again, this is just an indication that we have improved, but not good enough, from 419 to 421. That's really not good enough. A country that prides itself of immense talent, like we have, we can do much better than we do. And I'm not showing you that the problem is not only the foundation phase, not intermediate phase, it's not senior phase only. It grows with the system. Because we don't arrest it. It continues to grow. I mean, you can look in paper 1, in grade 12, how our learners are performing there. In paper 2, this one will be your traditional grammar paper. And this one will be your literature paper 2. And this will be your creative writing, your letters, essays, and so on. You can see how the performing is in it at the every point of the system. I'm going to give over to Dr. Joshua to give us a progress report on this.
I'm going to take you to the progress report on the pilot. We started the pilot at the beginning of this year in February, and the pilot will end at the end of October. Now, we have, as the DG indicated, put out a draft policy on IOR, and the aim of the policy, as Honorable Chair, you outlined in your introductory remarks, is basically to strengthen the use of African languages at home language level, to increase access to languages by all learners beyond English and Afrikaans, and also to promote social cohesion. And what we're saying is that we need to ensure that all our learners improve proficiency in and the utilization of the previously marginalized African languages. Hitherto, we've come from two language policy where English and Afrikaans have given the necessary resources and status, and the African languages have been marginalized. So what in putting this policy together, we're saying we want to concentrate on the previously marginalized African languages, ensure that they reach at some point the status of English and Afrikaans. Now, in terms of the progress of the pilot, we piloted the acronym is IOR, Incremental Introduction of African Languages. We piloted the program in grade 1 in 228 schools across the provinces except in the Free State. What we've done then, we've capacitated officials from all provinces in all languages to train and to support these pilot schools. We've put them through a training program themselves, and then they then trained the teachers of the pilot schools. And the training of the pilot schools then took place between December last year to June this year in all provinces that were implementing the pilot. What the DBE did to support the entire pilot, we funded all the resources. We developed workbooks in all languages at the first additional language level, because that is the level at which the pilot is being implemented. We produced lesson plans, audio resources, reading books, which are big books that are used in grade 1, and posters to encourage teaching and learning in the schools. in terms of the draft policy, the policy was gazetted for public comment late last year. We received public comment, we've analyzed the comment and collated them, and we're waiting for the finalization of the report from the pilot, and then together we will sit and look at both the result of the pilot as well as the public comment, and then we will be informed of how we should finalize the policy. This pilot was monitored by the DBE as well as an external provider. And the pilot process then took the form of on-site visits to schools to listen to lessons, telephonic interviews with provincial coordinators, with principals, with parents, that's the school governing bodies. We reported each phase of the pilot to the different structures within the department. And we conducted pre- and post-visits to schools as well, interviews with principals, with the teacher that implemented the program. We conducted focus group interviews with provincial officials and parents. And, of course, as I indicated, we had lesson observations as well. We have a preliminary evaluation report, and the report is basically making four recommendations. Firstly, we need to make a decision on the level of the third language. Now, currently, with the two-language policy, we have one at home language and one at first additional language. We've introduced the third language at the first additional language level as well. And so the report is indicating that we should now make a decision whether you introduce it at the first additional language level or at the second additional language level. Teacher appointments and IR resources should be finalized before the beginning of the school year. That's another recommendation that's coming through. And Mr. Mweli alluded to the third one, that we should be engaging with higher education institutions to offer pre-service and in-service African language training programs. We have started discussions with them, but I think we need to intensify our engagement around that issue. And then all foundation-based teachers should be trained to teach an African language. And I think this has also been very eloquently articulated by the DBE. What are DBE recommendations then to what we are seeing from the preliminary report? Basically, we are saying we will offer three languages, and one language will be offered at home language level, and the two others will be offered at first additional language level. But we're saying only two languages will be considered for promotion and progression in foundation phase. And that is the home language and one first additional language. So while we're going to offer three languages, two will only be for promotion and progression. But I think what is important then is that the policy should be finalized and making it mandatory that all three languages are implemented. And the language that is not particularly, that's not going to be for progression and promotion, be monitored extensively to ensure that it is happening in the schools. What will be the implication then for implementation? We want to implement in 2015, and here we will look at all those schools that are not currently offering an African language. And according to our EMIS data, we have around 3,738 schools that are currently not offering an African language. So our plan then is to ensure that these schools then offer an African language. We've put a management plan in place which delineates all the responsibilities of what provinces will do and what the DBE will do. And provinces then have to finalize the exact numbers of schools and the African language offerings in those schools, the number of learners, because it has implications for the workbook, and other resources. The plan for teacher provisioning for 2014 will be finalized by the end of October. The teacher branch is currently looking into this particular aspect, which is teacher provisioning. And of course the plans are also being rolled out into how we will train these teachers that will be identified to teach the African language, and also the resource provisioning. We're hoping all of that will be done before school starts next year. And of course, the final verification report and the public comments, as I indicated earlier, will then be put together to finalize the draft policy.
And I think, Chair, that's where I end with an apt quotation from our icon, Nelson Mandela. If you talk to a man in a language you understand, that goes to your head. But if you talk to him in his language, that goes to his heart. Thank you, Chair. Thank you very much for the presentation. Honourable members can interact with the presentation. I'll stop here. I see Mr. Cross. Honourable Cross, I'm sorry. Honourable Cross, Honourable Lovemore, Honourable Bishop, Honourable Basson, Honourable Mgun, Honourable Gold, in that order, please. I didn't. I think everyone is interested in much in the African languages.
Thank you, Chair Professor. I'm just going to ask the very question you asked. Are you ready? I think that's what I'm going to say first. The readiness. Because when I look at it, I know I took it the other way around. I did not understand it well, but now I get it the right way. I was thinking that when you say introduction of African languages, that you are going to teach your math in Xitsonga, your biology in Xitsonga. That's how I took it. That's why I wanted to see. But now, when you wanted to complete your presentation, now I came to the same level to all of you. But that question. I want to check that. But my question is, in the manner the teachers are going to be trained, how are we going to do that? Because, you know, when I left teaching, is the time OBE was introduced. OBE, you were supposed to take a three-year course, but we were trained on a two-day workshop. We couldn't make it. That's why I want to take us to how are these teachers going to be trained? Because are we not going to see teachers leaving if really they don't understand things that now are going to deal with? Then how are they going to be trained? Are we saying we'll start with new teachers so that they were going to implement after 2020? Because when I look at it, really I don't see us in 2015 saying now we would have trained teachers to do such things. Thank you, Chair President.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, when my children, my daughters were at school, at high school, they studied, and forgive me because I haven't yet mastered the hick, they studied English, Afrikaans, and Xhosa. They couldn't speak the language, however. They could not speak the language. I phoned their teacher, and I said, my children can't speak Xhosa, or they can speak English and Afrikaans. And she said to me, that's not the aim of what we're trying to do. We basically focus on the grammar, etc. So if we give them a piece of English, they can translate it and vice versa. So they were focusing on the written language, which actually doesn't help you with respect to social cohesion at all. So my question, based on that very personal concern, is what is your aim? Are you wanting children to be able to be conversational in the language that they are learning, or what is the focus of the language? So I raised a question a couple of months back on the schools that where the pilot was taking place, and I got a list of schools. I was a bit perturbed to see, and I'll tell you why I was perturbed, to see that, from my assessment anyway, most of the schools were, in fact, Quintal 5 schools, Ecuador C schools. The reason why I was perturbed was because I wasn't sure then, and this is my question to you, is whether the pilots will accurately inform the challenges that you might encounter, and all of the potential gains. You obviously will do better in a Quintal 5 school than elsewhere. So
are not concerned about that. Those schools that did offer this year, there were quite, I've forgotten the number, but it was a couple of hundred, 150 this year. The pilots this year? 228, sorry. The schools offered this year in grade 1, are they going to progress to grade 2 next year? Are they going to be offering in grade 2 next year? And then my last question, Chair, is there was a lot said about the standards of languages. In fact, in the report on the National Senior Certificate that was made public a little while ago, there's quite a scathing comment on the standard of Indigenous African language exams. They're too easy. Children are passing with 80% averages, whereas English Afrikaans is sitting at about 50%, 60%, I think. And the report says that it's not doing the languages any favours. So, I mean, we can't just attack it from the foundation phase, but not address. I hope that this is linking across the entire spectrum of the schooling career. Thank you, Chair.
Chair, let me comment by starting off. It's great to quote Mr. Mandela, and I think many of us have used that. I was at Art College for 5 years, and that was one of our famous quotes. But I also want to quote the Bill of Rights, which is in the presentation here, that it is the choice of the people to be educated in the language of their choice. Now, if you go, the two things here, we started off by explaining the importance of mother tongue education, which means that if I'm a Sepedi-speaking person, I would get all my subjects in Sepedi. Then there is the issue of an either first or second additional language, which is just let's say an additional language for now. And I think this is what this part of it is all about, is to, in the old days, I think my children were taught Northern Sotho in the first two or four grades of school then, and then stopped as far as I can remember. I'm sorry, I can't speak a language. I'll enroll. This happens because I can't speak the first language. I can catch a few words, which is very bad. But what I want to say is that I support this, but I must also warn that I think we're optimistic for 2015. We do not even have all our vacancies of teachers filled. Now we want to go with this. Have we identified specific teachers? Are these teachers experts in that language? And it's not to break it down. Why don't we wait another year and do it properly? Because October is 2 months away. And January is 4 months away to start. The issue I have here, person, is that it happens on the ground. If you are now saying, we take the first scenario to say that mother tongue education, then obviously I can say that you'll have to have incentives to get teachers to go and teach in the rural areas, because they don't want to be there. It's far from their homes, the circumstance ain't good, and there comes strongly some sort of anti-rural schools, where you actually needed the top teachers the most. So we have to look at that scenario. But coming back to the thick language chairperson, you cannot say, for example, because I'm a Sepedi-speaking individual, that I'll be a good teacher in Sepedi. So it doesn't help if we don't do it well. Then we're going back to dropping out again. So I think we are in support of a third language. I think every South African should speak a third language, a South African third language. But it must be my choice. And it must also be with quality. We must have the teachers to do it. And it must be sustainable, obviously. I'm very much concerned that we kick off something that is not sustainable and then we'll drop it instead of taking a bit more time and get it right and keep it there. And I think we should take note. We're not shooting down the thing, but I think role players in the education field has also raised their concern that the timing is too optimistic. And I think we must hear as much criticism. Sometimes criticism is assistance, so we must look at that.
Thank you.
Always.
Thank you, Chair. My questions have been covered, so all I'm going to ask now is, why was Free State excluded from this
Is there a reasoning behind it? Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Chairperson. I'm also conscious of the repetition of what the other person said. Mr. Morgan Jim, the idea is good, but implementation has changed. And since I'm from London, Northern Cape, we see that multi-racial because of the mindset and the environment and the way it is situated. The challenge that we have mentioned that there are schools from 300, 700 that are totally not teaching the black language. Now, if you have that idea of implementing African language in those schools, at that means you will get the capacity and the self-establishment would improve. Or they will get additional teacher. And then we have schools that are African schools, but it's difficult. I'm going to the point that a child who is learning with his or her mother performs better. So, but if we in the community that is feeding the school is the community that is a multi racial community of all the black languages of South Africa in everyone. Which one can reach you? How are you going to assist those schools to teach the more special populations to teach them in their mother tongue? And then
thank you, Sir. Since we are in the same language, now we just want to add some comments on the issue because we had some same questions on the issue of this language introduction. Mr. Mweli, that's a very good, it's a good idea. We all need to know as many, not even the three languages, as many languages. The issue of whatever languages. If you can know more than three, four, five languages, you are a real South African. A real South African. You see, I know Xhosa, Swazi, English, Afrikaans, you see, Ndebele, you see, I can speak all those languages. You see, a bit of Sesotho, I can speak all those languages. So, you see, I'm a real South African. Thank you very much. Thank you. Because I'm glad that they may have come out. We should also be checking what really happened. The introduction of OBE was a powerful idea. Mm-hmm. But you must also check on the, you remember Jensen from the visit of Stellenbosch, so what? Free State, Jensen. Yes. You see, when you speak, you sometimes quote. There were challenges that he brought in, which made OBE not to be, why it was a good idea, but there were challenges. We must also look at this one. When we introduce it, we check the challenges of human resource, of the physical resource. It coheres with feeder schools, because you may find that in the feeder schools, that other school is teaching Zulu, this one is teaching Swati, and this thing breaks down completely. Yes, the aim, there's one aim. You see, one member, you know, we get 80%. The aim of education, the of language, one is to make sure that there's integration, sort of integration. Number two, the aim is that 100% of learners must pass. 100%, that's the aim of education, that 100% must pass. But because of the social and the nature and everything that comes in, we end up having kids that do not pass. Because, Mr. Moy, one day, if you get 100% pass, people will complain, why is the education is easier? It is, man, it is easy. When you get sick, you make it difficult. When 40% passes, you say, no, man, you're not doing that, isn't it? So you don't know where to stand. But I think we are doing very well. But I'm happy. We must also look at the staff provisioning. Because every time we introduce something, we put a burden to the to educators. Principal, see how you look at a teacher who will teach African language. How will the principal look at it if the teacher is what just a lot of work is doing presently? I thank you, sir.
Boni, Honorable Koza.
Yes, Professor, I think they've covered almost everything, but I can share with you that on the 14th, I visited one of the schools where I witnessed the GT band debating in Siswati, because it's a Siswati area.
Mm.
And the level of confidence that these learners were bringing the points home, I was so impressed. That if a person is really communicating in the language that he is used to, because in other instances I happen to be part of the debates where they were debating in English, and it becomes worse when it comes to Afrikaans, whereas Afrikaans is the easier subject to pass. Yes, I'm saying that. Yeah. I happen to have one child who started learning Afrikaans in grade 12 and managed to talk at school.
Mm. Yeah.
Mm. So I'm saying this idea is a very novel idea, and it needs to be supported. Once we look at the gaps that are there that are supposed to be closed in, so can we take it very positive that it is going to work? Because in many instances we are used in putting the barriers. Instead of trying to shift the barriers not to be in front of us so that we can be able to move forward. So thank you.
The questions that have been raised are saying, I'll just take it from the first question that was raised, are we ready for the implementation for the rollout? Of which, again, for me, I thought, we are saying the pilot will be done by October. Yes, we don't have a comprehensive report of what is happening, but we do monitor as we move forward since the beginning of the year. Because even when you answer that question, our already count of teachers, the status of teachers, I think we need to learn from what is happening right now. What are your observations on this pilot, looking at the 228 schools that have been chosen to pilot? I'm also interested to know, how did you pick up on these 228 schools? Was there any criteria, maybe from different levels, so that it's easier for you to when you monitor and to learn from the experiences of these schools, where are these schools? It will even help us when we construct our oversight programs to say, when we go to a certain province, we definitely need to include one or two schools that are introduced, that have already started introducing this, so that we can see, we can have an experience of it. So if you can just move from that, from my saying, what is that you have learned, and you answer these questions to say how prepared or how ready the department is to do this from next year, if it is the point. Thanks.
Chair and honourable members, thank you very much once more. The sharing a bit on the lesson, I'll leave it to Dr. to share some of the lessons of the pilot project. And my sense is that they are very incredible lessons, and some of them are quite instructive. Now, South Africa is a country of a body of diverse views. There are those, and we take serious all the views that are expressed and the caution that is given to us. There are those like Pencilland who are saying that, in fact, they said this last year. They even said, why? You don't need a pilot. Start implementing. As you implement, you learn. And then you implement on a small scale. From the small scale, that your pilot, then you learn. As lessons become positive, then you increase the scope. That's another way of implementing. But he said, no, given the fact that we almost don't have even a literature base on how to proceed with this, the best way to move with it is to run a pilot and then use the lessons of the pilot to structure the implementation program for full implementation, and then at least we're able to get them to agree with the direction that we're taking. And it's not only pencil-led that people are saying, this is long overdue, we are just wasting time with this pilot, we'll never, for as long as we talk about problems and not move, we'll never implement. But he's saying we'll do what is in the best interest of our children, we will do what makes education sense, so that later on we don't regret. For something with good motives, with benefits and good intentions, which might lend itself to, you know, negative perceptions, simply because we didn't do proper planning, we didn't take off with the implementation as good as we should. So we take that into account. How we picked the 238 schools, well, provinces engaged with schools, and in fact, many schools, as a matter of fact, there are schools even now who are prepared to implement. With or without this pilot, there are schools. And by the way, in Limpopo, this was started as early as 2006, during the time of Minister Motsoaledi when he was the MEC for Education there. Some schools introduced this. In the Northwest, when I was there, there were schools that were running this, and those schools are even saying, actually, we could be far. And you supported us by giving us teachers, giving us books, giving us resources, would be far. We want to run. And all of these schools are your former overseas schools, which are quintile 5 schools, that are saying, we are ready to run. Our little population has changed. In the name, it's even 80% back, some of it 70, some of it 60. They say, we no one wanted to implement this. The only problem is that you don't support us. If you support us, we are gone. We want to go. That's what schools are saying. I mean, including FETA. FETA said, when we met with them, they said, let's go. Where are the resources? We want to move. Our members are ready. We want to implement this. Give us the resources. Work out the plan. We'll run with you. So that's how we picked up the 28 schools. Schools that were ready to get in. And in the name, they are incredibly global lessons because they volunteered. The majority of them volunteered. Honorable Kosa, I'm starting, you know, from the bottom up. Yes, indeed, we'll take note of the gaps, and thank you very much for what you've shared with us. Honorable Mguni, indeed, we'll take serious note of the implications, challenges, and so we'll factor them in our plan so that we don't sacrifice a policy with very good intentions such as this one. Honorable Basson, implementation challenges, are we appointing teachers? Yes, we do. We've set aside a budget to pay for these teachers. Let me repeat, we've set aside a budget. It's not schools. It's not school governing bodies out of their own coffers that are going to pay for it. The national department has identified funds to pay for these teachers. And then multilingual communities, yeah. You know, I've learned that in life the playing field is not always flat. Sometimes it's bumpy and so on. A province like Gauteng is a real challenge in implementing this. And we usually rely on the wisdom of school governing bodies and parents to then decide which languages are they going to implement. So that sort of your safety valve that you rely on. If the situation is more complex, we go back to people who understand the community and say, what is best for this community? Because we don't know, you know, tell us, and then they advise which language to go for. And Honorable Boshoff, why was the Free State excluded? It came from you. Yeah, it came from you. It came from you. We write it fervently when it came. The rest left it out because he had covered it. Free State was not ready. We waited for Free State until very late. And then we realized that waiting for Free State would be waiting to start in 2015. And then we got into an agreement with Free State that they will have to learn from the 8 provinces. they will learn from. Unfortunately, they've tried their school the opportunity to learn from their own context. But their context is not that unique. You can extrapolate it to the context of the Northwest. It can relate closely with the context of the Western Cape, say about maybe 2-3 variables, number of schools, commercial farming areas, so the context is not that vast. So we think that they left from the age, unfortunately. But I agree that it would have worked out much better if they participated. Honorable Father Rout, suitably qualified teachers, we are together. This is to be a success. It's not about somebody who knows how to speak the language. Speaking and teaching the language are two distinct things. You know, we're looking for people who are qualified to teach the language, because it's about teaching learners who have not been exposed to the language. Incentives, I agree. We are reviewing our incentive scheme to take into account all of these things to attract teachers where we need them. We are too optimistic. Well, this is part of the evaluation. And let's see. We presented to ECOM yesterday. We're presenting to you today. We present it to CEM next month. We'll listen to a very important stakeholder. We'll tell CEM also that this is the view that you express. And then we'll weigh all of this at the end of it all. Honorable Lovemore, African languages, I start with the NSC. Too easy? Yeah, we developed a grid of bringing all the languages more or less on the same path in terms of the structure and the aspects that are covered in the questions. What is surprising is that the distinctions that you get in English and Africans are far more than the distinctions that you get in African languages. The average is low, but the number of distinctions are more in Africans and English than in African languages. No. We actually need to bring African languages up. So we're standardizing how we are dealing with languages. We developed a language framework for the system, so we're looking at standardizing languages. Are the private schools going to grade 2?
Well, that's the view of some provinces that now that the net is exposed, why don't you think those that are going to grade 1, grade 2, we weigh in all of those, we have not made it. If that is your Food is not one of our problems. Former Montes schools, coincidentally, the majority of schools that have not used to offer the language average and not of the basic one of the problem. What is the aim of the program? Why is it that you can see the best? Not only about social cohesion, but there are learners who attend your former modules school, parents want them there, because of the experience, the choices that they have made. These learners find the things that they learn, and they are saying part of what they might have to do is to continue to expose them to the language that they are learning, so that when they struggle with the new language, they can relate the language that they understand to the new language that they are learning. Just we learned from introducing English from grade 1 that has worked for learners who proceed up to grade 4. It has huge spin-offs. You know, whilst you do a home language, you also relate what you learn from your home language to the new language that you are exposed to. So we are saying it's the benefit of those learners as well. I think Honorable Ngunu said the overall objective is to improve learning outcomes. Social cohesion is a plus. But the overall intention, really, is improving learning outcomes. Honorable course, I then I'll give to Dr. Joshua just to quickly 2-3 minutes, Catherine, and then round off. How are we going to train teachers? Now, is it going to be a 2 years work or what? First, we're going to use teachers that are there. We've done an audit. We know how many teachers are offering African languages. We know how many teachers are fully occupied. We know which ones are not fully occupied. And part of the good lesson, because I should have also mentioned, Western Cape also implemented at some stage, you know, a few years ago. In fact, we learned from Western Cape that the itinerant teacher would be a teacher that you place to service more than one school. Because the number of hours for teaching is 30, how many is it a week for African language? 2 hours per school. So you can't employ a person to teach 2 hours. So that person could be assigned to a number of schools. And we learned that from the Western Cape, that the notion of an itinerant teacher could be a model that we could use, even with the existing teachers, and bring in incentives, pay their transport, and so on, so that they service a cluster of schools in a particular locality. Are we ready? Yes and no. And we can only say the no part, we are evaluated by you, we are evaluated by HEDCOM, will be evaluated by CEM. And once that full cycle of evaluation has happened, but from where we're sitting, we believe that we can start implementing next year. We believe the work that we have done afford us that confidence to proceed. But we take caution in the comments that you have made, and I haven't received a HEDCOM workshop. I'll hear what HEDCOM is saying. We'll take it to the after them. Because then say, are we moving or are we going to have another additional year to tie up some of the things that have been raised on? Chair, Dr. Joshua, just a few minutes, please.
Thank you, Mr. Ray. I think you've answered all the questions, but perhaps just to, for the purpose of the 100 members, just to say that we used different teacher models in the pilot. And one of the models was to use the existing teachers that are currently teaching and understand the language and are foundation-based teachers to teach the additional 2 hours. In one province, they employed retired teachers that were qualified. And the criteria that we gave to provinces was that because they're teaching in the foundation phase, they should be qualified to teach in the foundation phase, understand the pedagogy, and also understand the language. So those are the two criteria around which the teachers were employed. And because they're qualified teachers, all of them, they needed an orientation into how they will manage this additional 2 hours. We prepared a training manual for them, took them through all the stages of the different aspects. We have developed all the resources, the rhymes, the songs, the stories, and everything in the different languages, and put them through an orientation of how they will introduce it in the classroom. So coming back to the models, you had Gauteng, for example, in some of the schools used the existing teachers. Mpumalanga, for example, used retired teachers, employed the retired teachers. KZN employed teachers, newly qualified teachers, and they created a transformational course, appointed these people to be on the staff establishment and to teach those to the 2 hours. And then, of course, the Western Cape, Molly informed you that they use the itinerant teacher model. Now, the pilot then was looking at the models of teachers, the pilot evaluation. And while all the models worked because it was just at this level, obviously, if you increase the number of hours and grades, you need to reassess the kind of model you use. But the teacher branch is now looking at employing teachers in a capacity where they will be either shared or starting now as itinerant, or be placed in a school to manage the teaching and learning in that particular school. So that was one of the things. Then the resources. We prepared the resources in all languages. We did lesson plans, we did workbooks, we did posters, we did audios for children to listen to and engage in singing and rhymes and so on. All of those were very well received. And even the report indicating that it was well received. In terms of time, we looked at the time to how the 2 hours was used, and one of the recommendations from the evaluation, or the preliminary evaluation, is do not relegate the 2 hours, or if you're teaching half an hour or 4 days, do not relegate always at the end of the day. Rather, intersperse for some days it's in the beginning of the day, in the middle of the day, and so on. So those are basically the the points that the evaluation was around. And of course, teachers indicated in the areas in which they will need ongoing support. We did an orientation, and then someone indicated, well, we need more help going forward in phonics or other aspects. So this, the continuing teacher development department will be looking at how they structure ongoing professional development courses for the teachers.
Thank you very much for the responses. And I know towards the end of our time, but let me give an opportunity if ever there are burning follow-up questions where you say you need to make a follow-up questions before I round off. Anything. Yes, Honorable Mahmoud.
Thank you, Chairperson. Is there a report available, or will there be a report available on the pilot, the findings that have come out of the pilot, the recommendations?
Thank you, Madam Chair. With regard to Free State, you now say they were not on board. What are we going to do if they incorrectly interpret what is expected of it? Okay, I see you shaking your head. I just need an answer on that. And then with regard to the budget, you say it's coming from national level. Are we sure that we have enough? Is it going to cover every single aspect of the exercise and not stop halfway and have the same problem we had with the ODE? Those are the questions that I would like answered. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Chairperson. I'm also concerned about Free State. I don't know whether it's because it's my sister province and we share same problems. So she has covered me. I wanted to know on the point of existing teachers being employed, are they also going to get extra incentives, or where are they going to get that time? Are they going to use their extra time to be paid? Because if they use their normal time, that means their normal timetable will be shortened somewhere.
I'm interested in that itinerant teacher that they have placed. Where was he or she placed? In one school? Because there should be a point of recording and evaluation.
Okay, just out of curiosity, if we now say we are ready, just kick off next year or whatever, the teachers that in the pilot now obviously are trained to do the first level. So if you pass these learners, then they go to the next phase. So obviously there's ongoing training there. So does the teachers move up to the next level and then you employ others to do the first? Because what we don't want is, like we've seen in many schools where there's overcrowding and not enough classrooms, etc., etc., we have different grades all in one class, because then you lose it. So I'm just curious to see if, personally I still believe that we are that ready. I'm not saying we're not ready at all. I'm saying we're not ready to go flat out in 4 months' time, I believe. Is that we'd rather see how they pass these learners going into the next phase. I think it's completed actually a better pilot project than just the 1 year. I'm concerned about, you can have books, you must have classrooms, you must have teachers, because preparing in grade 7 is not preparing grade 8 or grade 1.
Thank you. Thanks, Chairperson. I just wanted to check if we can get... I just wanted to check with the department if they are able to give us a list of those schools so that we know where they are in our constituencies. And then the other point is in relation to the schools that are already on the roll. Like Mr. Mwedi was saying that some of the schools they have launched, but the program. how do you reinforce the work that they are already doing? Because like here we seem to be focusing on the ones that are introducing the work. So how do we support them so that they are able to even go beyond what they have already started? Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much. Mr. Wadia, remind me, there is time stipulated for a learner going down to the school, I don't know what can you call that, just say, he or she needs to send the teaching aid. I don't know whether there is a time for that. How is this going to affect the whole thing? Because they've made a thing in 2008 on that one. Is there any problem not on that?
Let me start with that one. The issue, the anticipated challenge was around teaching time vis-a-vis the time that teachers spend at school, the 7 hours. Now, fortunately, the way this is broken down, it's 2 hours a week. We presented that as a PLRC, as a ELRC. It received favorable reception at the ELRC. The reason being that the time that is going to be used to teach is only 4 to 7 hours. So because of that, there's no problem at all. So you can even lengthen your school day, because it's still within the 7 hours. We don't need to renegotiate in the university. And then, Honorable Mokoto, schools that started, maybe I didn't explain this. Schools started, and when they were not supported by the department, they dropped the project. So it collapsed, except for in Limpopo, because it continued to receive support there. It's part of the, resourcing and the provisioning of schools in Limpopo. And many of the former schools changed completely because it affected in the resourcing of those schools. And then the list of schools, we can make that available, 228 schools where they are located, so that honorable members can also visit them and talk to them, interview them, and so on. And then I think it's Honorable Mguni, the placement of the itinerant teacher. What is ideal in terms of placing the itinerant teacher? You could place the itinerant teacher at a second or a district, depending on the number of schools. And I'm speaking from experience. I used to manage itinerant teachers. They were placed either at second office or at district office. That's where they report. And they are assigned their duties from there. And I'm sure Dr. Joshua will indicate as to what are the arrangement in the pilot. Honorable Basson, are there going to be extra incentives for the teachers who are there at school? If it's within the teachers, if it's within the teaching hours, no incentives. If it goes beyond the allocated teaching hours, then we consider incentives. And then Honorable Boshoff, are resources going to be enough? It's a very difficult one. Honorable Van der Waal helped me a lot. We are a resource constrained country. You'll never have enough. But the first thing is that the teacher we pay, the textbooks we provide, right? And other supplementary materials we provide. The rest, we must all contribute to making this country a better place to live in. Yes, you can. Free State, what I'm going to say, the things I've interpreted, we make an effort to develop a program for training people in the same way we implemented CAPE. We're going to follow the same route. Yeah, so we somewhat confident. Honorable Van der Waal, I think I've heard what you said in terms of
the readiness, if learners, but why I don't seem to get on the same page with you. You're talking about extra classes. Remember, it's not additional learners. It's the same learners that are there. Yeah, it's the same learners. I mean, the school would need them. It's not because of this. You only put it periods. It's period, teaching periods. You don't need extra classes. Unless if you talk about a shifting arrangement. But the shifting arrangement will happen within the shifting arrangement for all other subjects. And therefore you still need to use the same facility. And Honorable Love more before he leaves, that will make the point at the level. Once it has gone through a comment, as we usually do. So you can.
May I, through you, Madam Chair, I just need, I'm going to throw it to you, we were told that if a teacher teaches within teaching hours, no incentive, but aren't we just create a precedent and allow these teachers to teach after hours to be able to get an extra stipend?
Thank you,
Madam.
I'm sorry to start in the bush. Does everybody want to
No, as Dr. Joshua, the pilot advises that we factor in the teaching of the subject within the normal timetable, not towards the end of the timetable, in the beginning, in the middle, just like you do with all other subjects. And therefore, it wouldn't be viewed as even teaching for extra hours after your normal schooling, you know, timetable.
Yeah, thank you. I think it's the same approach, the same argument that you always have when you talk of sports. You know, as to say, it's still within the teaching hours where the teacher is paid the 3 hours. So if we don't, I think that's why I even asked this question, if we don't affect the time, if there is no additional hour that is going to be added for those teachers, it doesn't make a problem, really. It's still what they are getting paid on. It's just an addition of the period of she doesn't even appear, you know. That's it. And I also thank you very much for the presentation. We'll be watching. We'll be there to advise. We're waiting for October where we finish our pilot and look at that report. But really, it's something that we are eagerly waiting for to see being implemented in our schools. Thank you ever so much. Honourable members, the workshop that we agreed upon that we are still planning. As of now, we are just waiting. The only thing that I cannot speak boldly, boldly around here that we are going to be embarking on, it's because the application has just gone through to the House Chair. We are just waiting for the approval. But everything is here. The preparations are in place for the workshop where I will really plead with all the members to avail themselves, because that will be the workshop where we'll be having all the provincial the departments from all the provinces, the HODs, the MECs, having all the chairpersons of the select committees from the provinces, our entities, the three of them, the department, under one roof, where we'll be clarifying almost everything, playing ahead, as you say, on this administration, the fifth parliament, what is it that we want to see happening in education. So that will take place on the 29th and 30th, that is Saturday, it's Friday and Saturday. It will be a full day on a Friday, we'll be leaving here on Thursday evening, then finish on Saturday around lunchtime. So really to just be a plea that by all means to be in Pretoria, it will take place in Pretoria, will be hosted by the Department of Education.